I'm the sinister, Mr. Kiss, my ass is just a renegade. Never been afraid to say what's on my mind at any given time of day, cause I'm a renegade. Never been afraid to talk about anything,
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 anything.
Renegade.
Never been afraid to say what's on my mind at any given time of day, cause I'm a renegade.
Welcome to the T Podcast, the podcast about anything and everything from the perspective of one man, and that man is me. T from good old Boston, Massachusetts. It is November 20th, 2018. We are a couple of days from Thanksgiving. 2 days away. I'm still debating whether or not I'll have a podcast going up on Turkey Day. Maybe the day before, tomorrow, or maybe Friday. TBD. T to determine. TTD, I should say. What's going on the last couple of weeks? This past week, a few things have happened. Obviously, the California fires that they're calling the campfire, which is a tragedy with all the people on Cali that lost homes. A lot of the rich communities got impacted, and there's a lot of working people out there, too. And that's just sad what's going out there. A couple other shootings, which people are just knocking off like everyday life now, where I guess it's just okay for people to get shot up. And wherever they go, in religious institutions and churches, chapels, wherever they got to go, and, you know, schools and concerts and clubs. A lot of people that got shot at in California in that that bar, that club, a lot of them were survivors out in the Vegas shooting a couple years ago. And you know what? We just go on our lives like, you know, it's okay. It's just normal now. It's totally acceptable. God forbid we talk about gun control and what the fuck is going on in the world. We can't address this stuff, but actually South Park did a good spoof of that. It's not spoof, you know, it's not funny, but people are dying and whatnot. But if you watched South Park a couple of weeks ago this season, they stay relevant because they still edit the shows and chop it up and shoot it within all 3 days. But they did some school shootings where it's become like the norm, where it's acceptable that people are getting shot up in schools. And, you know, we're not really doing anything about it. We're just letting all that shit slide. You know, whether it's the politicians or us as people, you know, we're tolerated. What do we do? We go to Twitter and we tweet about it. Yeah, that's really going to make you know, people change their minds and shit and really get active and, you know, change the world and change the United States and the laws and bring in gun reform. Yeah, keep tweeting about it. Thoughts and prayers, right? That's what everybody says now, thoughts and prayers. Because, you know, your thoughts and your prayers is really going to make people safe in school and make guns not fucking go off and kill people, right? Thoughts and prayers. Anyway, today's podcast is about someone who passed away last week, and that is Stan the Man Lee. Why am I making a whole podcast about Stan Lee? Well, I'll get into that. Stan Lee is, you know, known today because of all the Marvel movies that have taken off with Disney buying Marvel for the movie rights, you know, about, you know, 10, 15 years ago. And they put together the Avengers world, and Stan Lee's been making those cameos. He's also appeared in Sony's Spider-Man as well, because Sony has the Spider-Man film rights, and the cameos that he made in the X-Men movies, which are owned by Fox. 20th Century Fox has been purchased by Disney, so the X-Men will be appearing in the Avengers Disney world pretty soon. But Stan Lee is the godfather of Marvel. You know, him and Jack Kirby that he partnered up with when they created all these characters, Stan Lee was the writer. So, you know, he's somebody that I've always liked and respected, and I'm not one to go on and on about, you know, celebrities and people of that nature. I've been on movie sets. I've been on LA. I've been on the ones here in Boston. I've met several celebrities, athletes, Boston sports athletes. There aren't many that actually have an impact on me, you know, that I really care about, that I want to talk about. But I got to say, you know, for my life experience and what these people have meant to me, at some point I'll talk about Kevin Smith, Quentin Tarantino, who inspired me to write, and with Clerks and True Romance that got me into the screenwriting world. But Stan Lee, you know, he had a big part of my childhood, and I'll get into that with what he did for me personally. But Stan Lee, before he was known for these cameos in Marvel movies, I think somebody has some history on him. A few folks do, as far as his history with the internet. You know, you just search Stan Lee to see where the hell he came from. It's pretty easy to find out who he created, where he created, you know, the Incredible Hulk, Spider-Man, the X-Men, a lot of the Avengers folks. But he was the core basis of what Marvel is today. A lot of the characters he created, you know, he wrote them out, their biographies and what they're going to be. And then some great artists, you know, they put penned together, like Steve Ditko for Spider-Man, Jack Kirby for all the folks, you know, they created them visually. But I mean, without the writer, without the idea, these characters wouldn't exist. And that was Stan Lee. And for me, I come from a world, I've talked about around here before, where I loved comic books as a kid, movies, this, you know, it's still part of my life, where comic book movies, I don't really collect comic books anymore. But as a kid, I had a huge, huge comic book collection, and I saved a lot of those. But my history with comic books were, as a little kid, my mother would take me to corner stores, you know, when I would go see my grandmother. And she had a couple of corner stores around there. We'd stop off, and I got some comic books to be quiet. And I had, you know, to keep me busy, I had Batman, Transformers, things of that nature. And then that's when I was pretty young, when I was like 8, 9, 10 years old. I had a lot of those. And then I got into the Marvel world, where my same grandmother, my mother would take me to go see her when we go food shopping, because my grandmother couldn't go food shopping for herself. They opened up a comic book store around the corner from my grandmother's house. And I was about 13 years old the summer it opened up. And I left my grandma's house. My mom's like, all right, go to the comic book store. Go there for a little while, and I'll meet you there. I'll pick you up on the way home. I was like, all right, cool. So I walked over there, and I would do that every Saturday morning when my mother would go food shopping with my grandmother, and we'd bring the groceries there, and I'd say go bye to my my grandmother and my grandfather. My grandfather passed away, but it was mostly my grandmother over there. And actually, my grandfather was around when I was 14, and that's when the Infinity War, which was the basis of the recent Infinity Gauntlet, was the basis of the Avengers Infinity War. And I remember reading that when my grandfather was in the hospital when I was 14 years old. So back when I was 13, when the comic book store first opened, I would walk over there and I would just go and read the books in the store. And I got to know the owner and all the guys in there. And I thought it was fun. I mean, if you watch the... Before, it was Comic Book Men, a bunch of guys just hanging out at a comic book store, and you know, they would just read the books, and there would always be these debates on who is the better superhero. A bunch of nerds, you know, back then in the early 90s, it was frowned upon, all these people, geeks and stuff. And me coming from a, you know, tough neighborhood growing up, I still had that nerd aspect in all the movies and comic books, and I didn't give a shit what people said. I wasn't afraid to speak my mind and let it be known that I love comic books. And I would go there every Saturday, and I just started collecting books and what I could afford on my own, that I had money saved up, or when my mother would come by and give me money, I would just stop buying them. And that era was Marvel was really blowing up in the early 90s, where we had some great artists like Jim Lee, Rob Liefeld, Tom McFarlane. Those guys were drawing these books, and Marvel was relaunching X-Men. They launched X-Force, which was once New Mutants. Eventually those artists left and they created Image Comics, and a lot of that stuff is being greenlit today. But the reason why Deadpool is out there today is because guys like Rob Liefeld, he drew that and created that for the X-Men universe. He created Deadpool. And I'm proud to say I have his first appearance. I have Deadpool's first appearance, and I saved a lot of my books from out of my parents' house. I put a bunch aside that I knew, I always had a sense for the business, that it'd be worth money one day. First appearances, special covers, crossovers, I knew all that shit, stored them in plastics and bins, and to this day, I still have a ton of them, and they sat for a while where they weren't making money, because, you know, obviously, there weren't movies back then. There's about 20 years where they're trying to get comic book movies off the ground, and until Disney bought Marvel's film rights, they didn't really do anything with them, and my books were worth shit. I couldn't sell them when I moved into the city. I just kept them, and just, you know, kept them in a closet at my parents' house, and it's still there to this day. Eventually I need to get the space for them, and I'll take them, you know, because like I said, I have a lot of ones that are worth money now, and I'm not going to sell them or anything. I just want to have them because they're part of my childhood, especially now that my mom passed away. I remember those days of going to the comic book store, the early days. My mother was like, well, what do you want? You know, she'd pick out these books, and if she hit a bingo, she had some money put aside, and she would say, you know, I want to get this Wolverine appearance, or an early Wolverine book when his first like run of the first like, you know, 25 comics that he had. And she would have like, well, how much is it? I'm like, oh, this one's $27. She's like, all right, I hit a bingo, and it'd be like, you know, something to buy an expensive book back then. But most of them when I was a kid, you know, they were $1.50, $1.75. And then when Image Comics launched, because they changed the ink and the way books were made and the paper, you know, they went up to $2.50. But that all started because of Stan Lee. And Stan Lee, you know, for me, that was a form of escapism. As much as I loved movies and going to the movies and watching movies, I loved comic books. I loved reading them. I love to see the way the characters came to life. I love the smell of a book and opening it up and holding it in my hands. I love doing that every Saturday and just getting home and having that books. And my sister had moved out of the house, and I kind of took over her room. And even though I had my bedroom, I turned that room into like my comic book storage room and my game room. I had like my Sega Genesis. But I'm going there, and I remember for hours and hours just reading my comic books and getting lost in those worlds of the X-Men. And that was all because even Spider-Man Parker was a clone. And so I was big into Spider-Man, which was created by Stan Lee, too. Avengers, to the extent of I never really picked up a solo Iron Man book. I never picked up a solo Captain America or Thor. But I did pick up the Avengers book itself. There was Avengers West Coast. They're no longer around, but they had a West Coast version of the team. And some of those characters, you know, hopefully will come to life in the next wave of these Marvel movies. But I would just, you know, read these books nonstop, and I would reread them, and I would put them in the bins, and I would seal the plastic, and I would have them. Through 75, when he had the adamantium stolen, ripped out of his body by Magneto. All these books I still remember in my head. And to this day, like, I could explain these to my nieces and my nephew, all the stuff they're seeing on film. Up and they love hearing it. People from work, they're always like, T, I want to hear your take on the comic book movie, or fill in the gaps. And I was like, oh, let me tell you about this. Let me tell you about how I went down the comics. And now, back then, when you were like a nerd, it's frowned upon. Today, it's okay. Millennials are all fucking nerds. You know, you could talk about comic book movies. You could talk about who you think is stronger, who you think can win in a fight. And Superman, which was fucking pretty shitty that was done in that Batman versus Superman movie. Martha. I'm not getting into DC. Luckily, fucking Stan Lee had nothing to do with DC, but DC's movies are a fucking joke. They're a disgrace. But Disney Marvel, you know, they got it right. They got a whole formula. They introduced everyone, all the characters first, and then they had the first Avengers movie, and then they built out the Phase 2, now they're in Phase 3. They had a whole thing going. They did it right. But none of this would exist today if it wasn't for Stan Lee. And for me, in my childhood, where as bad things got at home and, you know, battling with my father or being broke, we did manage somehow, some way to find ways to get comic books. My mother always made sure, you know, I had a comic book in my hand. And then right before I got my license, you know, I was about 15, 16. And the owner of the store, because I was going there for a couple of years, he's like, look, he's like, I can't pay you. I already got enough people on salary. He's like, you know, we just make ends meet at this store to stay open. He goes, but how about, you know, you work a couple of days after school and I pay you in store credit. I'm like, oh, store credit. So I can pick out anything I want. He's like, yeah. He goes, you pick out your books every week. The more hours you work, the more comic books you could take home every week. I'm like, fuck it. That's a deal right there. So I would get out of school, and obviously my homework was done. I was a straight A student. I'd hop on a bus and take it all the way to a couple towns over. And I would go there and I would work a couple hours every, you know, 2-3 days on Saturdays, but mostly after school and Saturday afternoons. And I would have those debates. Like I said, I was just like comic book man, talking to those guys and really reading the books and the comics that I had. And again, I was big on X-Men and even Batman, even though that wasn't Stan Lee. And from there, when I got my license, you know, I would still go pick up my books. I really wasn't talking about that with my hardcore Eastie boys because, you know, they'll bust my balls about, oh, T's picking up comics and we're still reading them. But I let it be known to this day. You know, some of them still ask me about comic book movies and what my collection is and buying the books. Because now I'm like, ah, now who the fuck was the geek back then, huh, fellas? When I was getting all my books and storing them, the first appearances. And now I'm a fucking grown man doing well for myself. I could fucking buy with any book I want. I just, you know, don't get the time and I'll hunt down those books. But, you know, maybe there's a couple of first appearances I may track down one day, go to an auction, put some bids in, now that I can do that. They're an investment, spread my portfolio, you know? But I got to go back and just look at my collection because I do have a lot of hot commodities now that these things have been turned into movie franchises and whatnot, TV shows. So I kept everything in pristine condition. You know, I thank my mother for that. Thank you, Paula. You know, everything that I had, it wasn't much back then, but just like she kept the apartment clean, I treated my toys really well and my comic books all because of her. That's why I think I have OCD and I keep my car immaculate, my desk at the office immaculate, my house. That's just how I am. And I treat everything that I had back then when I didn't have much really well, and everything that I have now. I have more than I had when I was a kid, but I still respect and treat everything. She made me humble like that. And my comic book collection is pretty sick to this day. But going back then and reading the books, when I was coming on that, you know, that tail end of, you know, about to go into college, I really, and I didn't share this with a lot of people. My mom knew, my cousin knew this. Obviously, I was applying to colleges, and I was getting into my colleges left and right, and I was getting scholarship money to go to school. And back then, I got into school. I wanted to go to be a writer. I wanted to get into journalism. I didn't really get into the design or the marketing end of what I do today, or business or what I do today, the asset management world. I didn't do any of that. It was straight journalism. I wanted to write. You're talking, you know, 1995, you know, graduating out of high school. 94, 95, I was applying to all these colleges, and you know, I still had that love for comic books. And I didn't know about screenwriting at the time. I didn't know if I wanted to get into movies. I didn't know about multimedia design and shit like that. So I was applying to my schools on just journalism. I was giving writing samples. But I had that love for comic books, and I had that love for writing. I would try drawing. I could draw you know, pretty decent, but not good. I knew I could never be a comic book artist. My sister's actually a pretty good artist. She doesn't really draw anymore, but she had that when we were kids. But for me, I had the writing side. So, you know, besides the colleges, I applied to, back then it was known as Joe Kubert School of Art. Now it's the Kubert School. I applied to that, and Joe Kubert, you know, he was an artist back from Marvel, and his sons, Andy and Adam Kubert, they both pretty much was X-Men, Wolverine, Spider-Man during the 90s. And I love them, especially Andy Kubert. When his X-Men run, I have a bunch of his stuff when I was a kid. I loved it. They inspired me. And that was the only comic book school that I knew. And I was like, I don't know. I always knew college was the way to go to, you know, let me see, where should I apply, make something of my life? You know, it was college. I knew the odds back then that I couldn't be a comic book artist or a comic book writer and make a lot of money, make a living, and, you know, do what I could and help out at home. So I just took a shot, and I applied to Joe Kubert's School of Art. And they didn't do scholarships like the colleges were doing. They did like one a year. But to get into the school, you know, to get admitted first before any type of money was awarded, they had to rate you on everything. And what they taught classes in was writing, storyboarding, drawing, obviously, inking and coloring. Inking's the people that go over the lines of the comics, that black that you see, like facial expressions, stuff like that, the outlining. And then coloring were the people that, you know, went over the color of the comic books, the comic book characters, any color you see on this on the page, obviously. Storyboarding were the writers. And then obviously the artist just drew the initial ink with pencil, and people went over the ink with that. So I had to get in. I had to try every form of what they were allowing kids in and what they were giving scholarships in and what classes they taught. And that was it across the board. So I did a couple samples. I did some drawing samples. I did a whole storyboard and outline and script and drawings for I did a Wolverine story and did a Batman story. Two of my all-time favorite comic book characters. I always be biased to Wolverine. He was a hot-headed Canadian. I'm not Canadian. He was a short guy. I'm not that tall, and I'm pretty hot-headed. And he was a badass. Didn't take from shit from anyone. Always spoke his mind. Kind of sounds like T over here, right? So I did that, and they got back to me, and they said they couldn't award any scholarship money because they only do one a year. But at the time, they were like, yeah, you can't draw for shit. Don't even try inking and coloring, but you could tell a story. And I got in on my Batman story and my Wolverine story. It was solo shots that I did. And I pretty much both of them, I didn't have them going up against any major supervillains. I did more like the backdrop of the story, what made them tick and why they were the way they were. And actually I went through the whole storyboard on Wolverine without him popping his claws until the very end. They didn't even have to use them. And Batman, you know, I try to stay away from the whole gadgets that he would use, or just going through Gotham City and going up against his ridiculous array of supervillains that he had. And I just did him going up against regular street thugs, and why, you know, Batman did what he did and how he reacted. More so, he was driven because of the death of his parents. But I had it all, very little dialogue, all from the inside, one mostly monologue from the inside of his head. And I remember those, not fully, but I remember having those storyboards, and I probably have them saved somewhere. I mean, again, I've written a lot of shit, people, over the years. I've had a lot of scripts and a lot of stuff that I've written, so I don't know if I still have those storyboards, but I got in on that. And then I was like, oh, that's cool. And I was like, I don't know. I can't afford it. My family can't afford it. My mother couldn't give me any money. I'm like, I can't go. The school was in New Jersey. I couldn't go live down there paying the dorm rooms and do the school for anywhere from 2 to 5 years. So as much as it was kind of like just feeling good about getting in, I knew that I had to go to college, and obviously Northeast University, a five-year school with the co-op program, giving the business side of it all. You know, they gave me about 3.5 years in scholarships. So that was like a slam dunk, no-brainer. They gave me the most money. It lined up, you know, me working and eventually getting into corporate America, you know, before that, the screenwriting. So I went off to college, but you know, that was all from the basis of me loving comic books. And it all started with Stan Lee, and it tied into those Saturdays I had with my grandparents, my grandmother, my mother, all who have now, you know, passed away, as tough as that is to say. But comic books were always near and dear to my heart. And that all comes from Stan the Man Lee and what he has done. And even to this day, you know, the love for movies. Now that I got to see true comic book movies based on characters he created, the 80s and 90s comic book movies sucked because, you know, they didn't have the special effects, they didn't have the budgets, they didn't have people behind it. You couldn't get any A-list actors. You'll never see a Robert Downey in, you know, in a fucking comic book movie. You wouldn't see, you know, in the 80s and 90s, those types of people in those movies back then. You wouldn't see like a Stallone. He did it later on in his career with Judge Dredd, but you couldn't get the A-listers to do it. Now, you can't name like an A-list actor or actress that hasn't been in a comic book movie or TV show, hasn't been tied to that universe. They all want to do it. And that all comes from, you know, one, not just one man. Obviously, there's a lot of people that created characters, but Stan Lee, you know, he was a big part of that Marvel universe. And today, the comic book movies that I see, I love talking about friends and family at work. I love being able to share with my nieces and nephew those comic book movies, going to the movies with them and shooting the shit and talking about, you know, when I was a kid, you know, this is the book I got and this is still at Nana's house. And talking about the Infinity Gauntlet and how that, you know, how in the comic, you know, how Thanos had to get the all the gems and how that translated to what they've seen in the movie. And I remember, you know, sitting there for my nieces and my nephew this past summer where, you know, Infinity War, where I knew it was coming, that, you know, Thanos was going to, you know, snap his fingers and wipe out half the world, because that's what he did in the comic series. And then to sit there and them looking at me as one by one, all the, spoiler, by the way, if you didn't see the last Infinity War, but, you know, what tough shit, it's been months. So when they all started turning into dust, you know, they're looking at me like, oh my God, what's happening? Like, at that time, I didn't know what characters they were going to choose to turn to dust on screen. But I'm like, yeah, this is how I went in the comic. And then when Spider-Man went, he's like, you know, to Iron Man, he's like, sir, I don't want to die, sir. And, you know, and Peter Parker turned to dust. And they're all looking at me like, what? I'm like, yeah. I go, but, you know, we're not giving anything away in the comic books. If they continue down that path, and again, people, I'm not giving anything away at the upcoming movie because I don't know what's going to be the Avengers 4. But in the comic book, you know, they reset the clock. Adam Warlock was the guy that defeated Thanos in the Infinity Gauntlet in the comic book. And, you know, they reset it and everybody came back to life. So as you all know, that's probably what's going to happen in the movies. But some of them are probably going to end up dying or remaining dead because they got to wrap up their contracts. Where I'm speculating here, I'm thinking Captain America and Iron Man, at least Captain America is going to die in Avengers 4. But we'll see how that turns out. So I love seeing that source material finally on the big screen because you got two of my most favorite things. You got comic books and you got bomb-ass fucking movies now. And I love comic books as a kid. And I love that, you know, the source material for these great movies that I get to see now as a grown man. So I thank you, Stan Lee, for that. I thank you for the childhood that I had, my love for comic books. You're 95 years old. You appeared in every damn Marvel movie. That cameo, True Believers, Excelsior, I loved fucking seeing you there. So yes, somebody, you know, that's been a part of my childhood, getting through those awkward teen years, and now as a grown man. So you made a tough Eastie kid a little softer by giving me something that I could hold on to, something that inspired me. And now I think you're in heaven, obviously, with my mom. And I'm hoping, you know, she's telling you, like, yeah, my son used to drive me nuts making me go to that comic book store every Saturday. And I guess it's because of you, you know. You created all this. And I got to thank you for that. So I had to get that out there about Stan Lee, you know, what he meant to me, what he meant to the world, you know, for generations to come. And before I close out this podcast, tied into Stan Lee, I told you all a couple weeks ago that I was going to introduce a new feature to the T podcast, and that is the quint of the week. Sometimes it'll be quints of the week, sometimes it'll just be a quint. Again, it's the play on the C word. See you next Tuesday. I just say it that way. Go back and listen to the podcast. I introduced it. So the quint of the week this week is tied to Stan Lee. There's an actor out there. Goes by the name of Armie Hammer. Armie. Not Arnie. Armie. He's a big, tall, dopey-looking motherfucker. And he was in The Social Network, that Facebook movie. He played twins in that movie, even though he's not a twin in real life. He played two people. And he was in the beyond shitty, because Johnny Depp has lost his touch, Lone Ranger, where he played the Lone Ranger, but the focus of the movie was Johnny Depp's character, Tonto, which was absolute shit. And then he made another movie with Henry Cavill. That fucking guy who was Superman, who just recently quit, where they teamed up that spy movie I forget the name of it, but it was Guy Ritchie. That was terrible. That's how much I forgot it, and I love Guy Ritchie movies. But Army Hammer takes to social media, takes to Instagram, takes to Twitter, whining like a little bitch about how people, celebrities, mostly celebrities because that's probably all who he's following, were putting up selfies with Stan Lee the day he died as a tribute. And he had a problem with that. He was all like, put up pictures or tweets of his work, his creations, telling people how they should honor someone. Yeah, okay. And instead of putting up selfies with Stan Lee, why don't you put up pictures of something that he did to honor him? And everybody's like, who the fuck are you? People are like, I worked with him, blah, blah, blah. And he's like, well, I did too. Apparently he did some fucking cartoon with Stan Lee. It wasn't like he was in any Avengers movies. Like, his face wasn't ever on screen with Stan Lee. And he's telling people how to honor someone. Look, I'll tell you what, motherfucker. My mother passed away not too long ago. And what I did on social media, because I love my mother that much, I put up pictures of me and her of where we were. We traveled the world together, where she looked her best, where she looked happy. And those were selfies. I'm a grown man. I'm not walking around with a selfie stick. I'm not a kid doing fucking Snapchat filters with a dog face like the thoughts do out there. It is a selfie with somebody you cared about. That was the moment. You captured a moment in time. And I'll tell you what, I do that now with my nieces and nephew because I get selfies with them when they were little, as they grown up. And I do that with even my buddy that we have season tickets to the Patriots. We don't have many more, but we went because I remember every game that I went to just from that selfie. You capture moments in time. And it's some people, yes, put stuff up there to get likes on the selfies. And I'm sure a lot of people put it up there like, oh, let me get likes. And I get that. And in this day and age, everybody just automatically puts a selfie of themselves up there. It's part of the vernacular. That's what we do. It's part of pop culture. But you can't tell somebody how to honor a dead person. And if they had a relationship with Stan Lee or worked with the guy, or at some point they captured that, it's okay to put that up there. Now, I'm very picky and I'm critical of how people use their social media. And that's for another fucking tea podcast or another day. But today, it is okay to put a selfie up with somebody that you loved, that you respected, that you worked with, that was your friend, that was your family member, because you capture that moment in time and you honor them, and you're allowed to honor somebody however the fuck you want. So fuck you, Army Hammer. For that, you get Cunt of the Week. That's right. And one more, because this is going up on November 20th, and I'm recording in between when everybody was voting on Super Tuesday, this past Tuesday 2 weeks ago. I gotta say something. Now, this is how I bust balls on social media. I'll let the selfie slide when you're honoring somebody that passed away. This I'm not going to let slide. You're telling me this day and age, where we all have something to say about politics, where we all either hate Donald Trump or people love him, where people knowing that voting makes a difference, that you know you got to get to the polls. And now we're getting record turnouts, and everybody's seeing that. And everybody's like, oh, you got to vote. You try to inspire somebody. You hear a celebrity. Like, I don't get why a celebrity has to tell you to vote. You're a fucking American citizen. You should get up and fucking vote, and then you can't complain. Because the people that don't vote, you can't complain about any president, any senator, any fucking politician that gets into any type of office because you didn't do your part. Vote. I get that. But I'm telling you, those people that fucking vote, and here you are, all you people that did this, you are now Quints of the Week. All you motherfuckers who take your I voted sticker and you put that on social media. Why? You are absolutely a cunt of the week. There is no need to put an I voted sticker up there. Oh, good for you. You fucking voted. I'm so fucking proud of you. You're supposed to vote. Like Chris Rock said, you're supposed to take care of your kids. You're supposed to vote. You're supposed to eat. You're supposed to breathe. You're supposed to shit. It's just a part of life. Now, don't put your fucking sticker up there. Nobody gives a fuck. And people are like, oh my God, let me like this. You voted. I did too. You know what? I got a sticker. I didn't put that shit on fucking social media. And I put one thing up there. I'm like, you know who else has a sticker? Fucking bananas. Bananas come with fucking stickers. Are you special? The banana is special? You're a fucking banana. It's a sticker that you voted. Don't ever do that again. Next time you vote, just vote. And shut the fuck up about it. If you want to rally people to vote before the actual voting, that's okay. Inspire people. Maybe raise a fucking topic or a bill that they don't know about. Why you're voting yes on this one or no on that. That's okay. Get them to vote. Putting a sticker up after the fact? That does nothing for nobody. That makes you like Army Hammer. That makes you T's Cunt of the Week. Thank you very much. And until next time, everyone. Always take it.
time of day, cause I'm a renegade. Never been afraid to talk about anything.
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 Renegade.
Never been afraid to say what's on my mind at any given time of day, cause I'm a
renegade.
Never been afraid to holler about anything.